Hey, Prepper Recon fans, welcome to another edition of the PrepperRecon.com podcast. Our mission is to bring you great interviews with preppers from around the globe so you can be better informed and better prepared for everything from a hurricane to the end of the world as we know it. Today's guest is Fernando Farfall Aguirre. He is the author of Surviving the Economic Collapse. Fernando, thanks for coming on the show today.
Well, thanks for having me. It's good to be talking with you.
Sure. Can you give us a brief overview of what happened in Argentina in 2001?
Yeah, it was basically the consequence of a poor political and economic decision of pegging the dollar to the currency of the local currency, which is the peso. So it was a one-to-one exchange rate that, combined with increasing national debt, ended up in lots of job losses, the destruction of the national industry, and when we couldn't keep up with that, they defaulted on the national debt, $132 billion, and everything went to hell from there.
Wow, that's terrible. When did you first see the signs that things were getting bad?
1999, 2000 was already showing, lots of unemployment, lots of poverty getting a little bit worse and such that it already was. And it was a time also there was a political change. The guy running things until then, Menem, was replaced by a new party that couldn't keep. Typical of South American countries, you kind of need a strong political figure. And the new government wasn't doing things. It's not as if they were more corrupt than the previous ones, but they lost control of all the different local leaders. So everything started falling apart from there too. And combined with the loss of national industry and increase in unemployment, it just didn't end up well.
Yeah. So in 99 and 2000, when it was building up to the collapse, did people know they were going to have a currency collapse, or were they somewhat oblivious to the fact, like we are in America right now?
Well, Argentina is interesting because it's like a more extreme case of everything that you see in more in first world countries. You know, Argentina had gone through previous economic collapse in the past. Argentina had gone from pesos to austral, back to pesos, people's money being stolen in different, basically every 10 years, give or take, things fall apart in Argentina. So it's not as if it was a complete surprise, but people tend to forget pretty fast. Yeah. I think that very few people were expecting this to happen yet again.
Yeah, so they don't have quite as bad the normalcy bias that we have.
No, I think that the average American is a little bit more naive. And I don't mean this in any wrong way or anything. It's just that the average guy in U.S. hasn't had that ugly experience in their lifetime, so to speak.
Yeah, unless you're over 90 and you lived through the Depression, you've never seen anything like that in America.
Exactly. Imagine that a guy that has lived through the Depression that was in the 30s. If you think of it, the average Argentine being 40 years old, he has seen this at least three times.
Wow. Now, did everything happen overnight, or was it a long, drawn-out process?
Well, it's not easy to say. You know, it happens all of a sudden. It happens. I think it's a combination of things. You have, like, certain milestone events that are very clear, such as, well, of course, when the president resigns and escapes the presidential building in a chopper, those are very dramatic moments. When civil unrest starts and there's rioting and loss of control of many parts across the entire country because of all this looting going on and the police not being able to control things, that's very graphic. But at the same time, you know that this has been happening for some time. You know that even before that happened, people in the know had been leaving the country with bags full of cash, escaping with their savings. And so it is both things in a way.
So it's sort of like slow then fast, I guess you could say.
Yeah, and you have certain events that are like landmarks of, wow, this is very real, this is happening.
And then your first book, surviving the economic collapse, you tell a little bit about some of the things that you did to survive all that. Can you tell us a little bit about your first book?
Yeah, I wrote it basically because I realized that many of the things that I was looking to prepare for weren't being covered. It mostly was the kind of literature that you find in the survival genre is more related to wilderness survival, a little bit adapt. I would buy an urban survival guide and it would explain me how to start a fire using a couple of sticks or how to fish in a lake. And, you know, it wasn't really helping me for the kind of thing that I was going through. So, based on what I was learning along the way and what I saw was working for other people as well, what ended up working for me too was what I reflected and put in a book to share with others.
Awesome. I think every prepper in America has their own version of what they think the collapse is going to look like, but there's several thoughts that are popular among preppers. I'd like to go through some of those and see how our imaginations line up with what you experienced in
right.
the collapse. For one thing, a lot of preppers think that the dollar will be completely worthless and will be bartering with silver and gold. Did the peso get to the point that stores no longer accepted it?
No, it never got to that point, and even though there has been, I always recommend and tell people, look at history. If it hasn't happened in the past, then there's really a chance that it will never happen in the imminent future. Now, there has been cases of countries where money lost complete, any worth, any value completely. Now, those cases were very specific. I don't see the dollar. In our case, it lost. It was pretty bad. I mean, imagine it's a South American third world country with a complete economic collapse. The president resigns and no one wants to take the presidency of the country. It doesn't get much worse than that. We had 5 different presidents in a week because no one wanted to be.
Wow.
So it's hard to imagine something worse than that. And even in spite of that, we lost, the peso lost like 70% of its value in all.
In what period of time?
In a matter of weeks, really.
Wow.
At first it was just 1.5, but quickly it went to 3, to the dollar. So yeah, very quickly.
Wow. Now did people use gold and silver to barter or did they use anything for a barter system?
Well, when all this happened, basically the economic activity froze. At the same time, they had frozen most of bank accounts, people's bank accounts. They had frozen them, so you couldn't really use that for purchases and such. But if you think of it, of a real 25% unemployment, very little economic activity, even those that had a job, nothing was really going on. I mean, it got to a point that people didn't even buy a can of paint to paint a house because you just wanted to see what was going to be happening in the future. The companies that had stock wouldn't supply, waiting to see what would happen with the price. So everything was, in terms of the economy, was frozen. If you combine that with the unemployment, lots of people found that they didn't have a job, there was not any jobs for them in the future. So bartering became one of the few tools they had left. And barter clubs started because of that. Now, soon enough, it was clearly obvious that you needed still some form of coupon or currency of some sort for making those transactions. And that worked for a while, but soon enough, the local currency took over.
But there was a sort of a period where people didn't really use pesos.
Yeah,
there
was quite a bit of a period where people actually did barter. Now, it wasn't like the ideal solution. Anyone that ever used bartering to get by would have told you the same thing. They did that because they didn't have any other option, any other choice. As soon as something better came by, yeah, they went for that. Regarding precious metals, it's not as if people were actually bartering and trading and buying with little pieces of gold and silver. What most people did that had a need for it is that they sold whatever jewelry, gold they had, or anything, any precious metals that they had. they would sell that to get a few bucks, buy food, buy whatever it is that they needed. Learning that lesson, lots of people started buying gold and silver so as to keep their savings.
So it was a good way to preserve your wealth. That maybe not exactly. Necessarily so much as a barter tool, but people used it to preserve their wealth while the peso was losing 70% of its value. If you convert it into gold and silver, it'd still be worth after the collapse what it was worth before the collapse.
Right.
Yeah. And then what about grocery stores? Were the shelves still stocked in Argentina, or did you have panic runs on grocery stores?
Especially when in December 2001 and for a few months after that, during a few days it was complete anarchy and you just had to stay put and wait until things calmed down. But even after that, there would be sporadic incidents of violence and looting. To a point it was actually, you know, some people, there's never like a black and white scenario. Sometimes it was people looking to take advantage of the lawlessness situation, so to speak. Then there was, you know, people that were really hungry and didn't have any money to survive, just desperate people. And they would approach the supermarkets and say, look, we just want some food. If you could please give it to us, that would be great. If not, we'll have to take it ourselves. And in many cases, something was arranged and they gave them some food and that was that.
So it's a good idea to have at least enough on hand to where you don't have to get out in that mess for a couple of weeks or months or whatever.
Yes, if you have food stocked up, I mean, you're going to be eating it eventually, and it gives you a time window to move and not have to go out there when all this is happening. You know, having been through that, it can be dangerous, and if you can avoid it, go for it.
So were there some stores that just closed their doors because of the looting and they just didn't want to deal with that, so they just locked the doors and said, well, we're just not going to do business anymore?
Yeah, mostly that they found, again, that in-between gray area. They couldn't just completely close their doors because they still had to be open for business, yet they had to find a way of protecting themselves from these incidents. So what you saw was, in some places you saw supermarkets suddenly closing their parking lots with very tall, you know, 7 feet tall fences so as to have improved security. At one time I saw some of the employees making a barricade with the shopping carts with tying those making a barricade with that. In some of the worst parts of town, they actually had a guy with a shotgun standing in front of the supermarket and, you know, just as intimidation or, well, whatever. But, yes, that was basically it.
So I guess there's always going to be the possibility of getting some sort of a security job in that environment.
Yes, absolutely. Security job is one of those few jobs that it's available when things start going down like that.
I think many preppers also think that the power will go off and it'll never turn back on. How did the power grid do in Argentina?
Again, that same gray area of something in between. Blackouts were very common. At the same time, you still had power, even though it went down pretty often, so you still had your power bill to pay and so. What I experienced myself was something interesting, that it's what they call dirty power, which is, since the grid is in such a poor condition, when you have power, even if you have it, it is of a lower voltage than it should be. So things like maybe a microwave or air conditioning does not work well. I ended up installing a gadget that's like a voltage elevator that raises the voltage of the power you're getting so as to run those appliances without a problem.
So you gotta pick and choose what you're gonna use.
Yeah.
Prioritize. Probably the fridge for me. It's gonna be my number one thing. A lot of preppers think that the police are going to quit their jobs and go home to protect their own families. How did that play out in Argentina? Were the police overwhelmed by crime?
Police were indeed overwhelmed by crime. There's no way, and people have to understand this, if there's widespread rioting and anarchy, there's no country in the world that has enough police or military force combined to stop it. We think we live in a civilized world because it does not happen all at the same time. Exactly the same as with a bank run. No country can survive a bank run. If everyone runs to a bank right now and demands cash, banks would collapse. If everyone starts rioting at the same time, or even small groups rioting in the different major cities and such, police would be all overwhelmed. That was what happened in Argentina, and that's why you saw so many incidents of looting, of rioting, and police force just couldn't handle it.
Yeah, that's a great point you made about the banks. I think that our M1 money supply, or M2 money supply, is $10 trillion. And our FDIC, which is our insurance, federal insurance company that guarantees those deposits, whatever their number is that they have in the reserves is counted in billions. So it's less than 10% of.
Yeah, I think that even, you know, like 2-3% of people go and try to take out their money at the same time, it would collapse the system.
Yeah, and there's no physical dollars printed for that.
No way.
The amount of time that it would take to get those dollars printed up and out to the people, it would be complete anarchy by the time that happened. And if they printed all that money to give to the people on those deposits,
it would devaluate it in ways never seen before as well.
Yeah, it would be like the peso. It would lose probably over 70% of its value.
It's so interesting because it seems like such a cold and by the numbers thing, but the economy is basically the trust that people have in that piece of paper being worth something. Once that trust is lost, then it means nothing.
Yeah, confidence is the lifeblood of markets, that's for sure. Now, if you were talking to an American that had never done anything to prepare and they said, okay, what do I do first? Where do I start? What do you recommend for them to do?
Well, there's really not just one thing that I would recommend. I would recommend first looking at yourself, your priorities, the type of life that you have, getting your life in order, which, you know, a lot of people don't. A lot of people have lots of problems within their family and such. First, get your life in order. Get yourself in order. Start going to a gym a little bit more if that's something that you're lacking at, because your physical well-being, first of all, take care of your mental well-being, then take care of your physical well-being, and after that, let's talk about what you have to buy, what you have to stock up and such, and the skills you have to acquire.
Yeah, mind, body, and soul, because if you're 400 pounds and you can't get off the couch, you're not going to do good in a collapse scenario.
Hey, it's not even funny, but being in such poor physical shape, if you have to deal with the economy collapsing, probably you're going to be getting a stroke or a heart attack before anything else gets to you.
Yeah, that's true. And what's your number one recommendation for American preppers? What area do you see that they consistently fall short in?
One of the things that I see the most is just that people buying lots of guns, having a pile of cool toys, but they have a blood pressure that's through the charts, and you realize that guy is going to be having serious medical issues before anything of the things that he's preparing for. That would be clearly by a great margin the number one problem in which they're failing.
Is health and physical fitness and...
Man, it's what kills most people, crisis or not. And when you have, when you add a crisis to it, it just makes it so much worse.
Right. And I think a lot of people go into debt prepping too. They do a lot of prepping on credit cards and they're not financially responsible. And I think that makes things harder in a collapse scenario too. Because like Argentina, you know, it wasn't really the James Rawls Patriots type collapse. I mean, we could have something like that, but more than likely it's going to be more of a partial collapse.
And, if you think about it, there's never been a James Rawls type of collapse, because it's just basically something that he came up with in a work of fiction. So
yeah.
If you look at incidents where everything went to hell, it never happens like that. I mean, if a country goes to hell completely and maybe you have people being chased and murdered by an invading force, no one is going to be surviving that by staying in a, by bunkering in and fighting the UN or whatever. It's a matter of fleeing that place and surviving because of that. The Jews that stayed in Germany fighting, their prospects of survival were quite awful compared to those that escaped before they couldn't leave anymore. And there's countless accounts of that same thing happening in different parts of the world and different periods of time.
Yeah, that's true. And Argentina's getting pretty bad again. I guess Cristina Kirchner, she's initiating capital controls, and they're putting price fixing the grocery stores. And
yeah, it's getting ridiculous, and it's unfortunate. You know, I know I left when things were getting even. It has been bad for some time now. As I said many times, Argentina never got back on its feet after what happened in 2001 with the crisis. But with such a government, extremely corrupt, you know, beyond anything we've ever seen before, and doing all these things that are like Chavez in Venezuela or even Cuban type of mentality, it really is destroying everything. I was talking the other day with a friend of mine, an American that was living in Argentina. He left shortly after I left, and he was telling me that some of the expats living there for over 20 years were already leaving and having problems getting their money out of the system.
Wow, so you bugged out. You went to Northern Ireland. What made you choose Northern Ireland?
Well, my first option would have been going to U.S., which, in spite of all the problems and all, I still think that it's the best place, at least for someone with my type of mentality, that's where I would have gone. I have a European citizenship, so that made it easier for me compared to going to U.S., where it's very, very hard. In spite of what you see with all the illegal immigrants, for legal immigrants, it is much more difficult than most people think. So I was basically looking at Europe for leaving Argentina as fast as I did. Leaving in a hurry, I needed to have a citizenship wherever it is I was going. Spain would have been one of the obvious choices because I speak Spanish and actually have quite a bit of family in Spain. But as you know, the situation in Spain is pretty bad. If I was looking at English-speaking countries, I had, Scotland, England, in Ireland. I decided for Ireland because of a series of reasons. It's smaller, it's safer, it has great education for the kids. And basically that's why I narrowed down looking to Ireland.
Yeah, you're right about it being a bear to immigrate to America legally. My wife's from Paris, and even with being married, it was lawyers and fees and hoops and hurdles for a few years.
It's madness.
Yeah, I think it took 4 years, the entire process, for her to be a citizen.
Wow. Being married and also an American.
Yeah, even with her being married to me, yeah. So have you considered writing a book on relocation?
Yeah, actually my second book is going to be about just that. I'm actually finishing it, and it's going to be available soon. not sure when, but it's going to be, yeah. It's about relocating and bugging out. It's what I've learned through this little experience of mine again.
Very good, very good. What is your website so the folks can find you if they want to check you out?
Yeah, it's themodernsurvivalist.com.
All right. We have a link to Fernando's website in the show notes below. We will also have a link to purchase his first book, Surviving the Economic Collapse, through Amazon. That'll also be in the show notes below. Fernando, thanks again for coming on the show. We'll have to have you back on when your new book comes out.
Absolutely. It would be great talking with you again. Whenever you want, just give me a call.
Absolutely. Thanks again. An economic storm is headed our way. The die has been cast. We must spread the word and prepare. The coming collapse will bring a contest between tyranny and freedom. If the patriot is to prevail, we must stand as one, pledge allegiance to our God, and defend the Constitution. If you are new to prepping or would like to learn more, read our 7-step survival plan. You can find it under categories on the left-hand side of our website. Thanks for listening to the Prepper Recon podcast. God bless and happy prepping.